I was talking with a congregant earlier this week about quotation and the places from which quotations come. Most common, I think, are Emerson, Churchill, Lincoln, and the most common of all is Samuel Johnson, whom no one has ever read, but lots of quotations come from Samuel Johnson. And of course, there's Shakespeare and the Bible. It's great sources of quotation. So here's one where I think that Shakespeare is quoting the Bible or is alluding to the Bible. It's the scene in Romeo and Juliet where Mercutio is about to die, and he shouts forth, "I am hurt, a plague of both your houses. I am sped. Is he gone and hath nothing?" So I think that's in the latter portion of this parsha, not the part we read, the plagued house, the house with mold or infection or mildew. I have a book up there that seems to be a little musty, mildewy, so I put it in a bag with baking soda for 10 days. Did nothing. Had no effect. It's still just as mildewy. I was very disappointed when I opened the bag. So, and I thought also as I was reading, this is not apropos of the sermon, but I was thinking about one of the things we were reading about, the skin discoloration, and I thought, that guy really needs to get that checked. That's probably a melanoma. So, and you know how you have the signs of a melanoma? Is it irregular? Are the colors variegated? That was in the second or third Aliyah today. I thought, that's not leprosy. That's a melanoma. That guy's in a lot of trouble. So our sages understood this whole process of skin affliction, beard discoloration, house issues, household issues, sexually transmitted diseases, issues after birth, after childbirth, of discharges and bloods. And as was pointed out in your program, in the insert from JTS, it starts to feel like a surveillance state, that your neighbors are kind of watching you to see if you have any discharges or discolorations or your beard looks funny or your baldness is coming out or coming in an odd way. There's discoloration on your skin, which could be eczema, could be, like I said, a melanoma, could be a wart or a mole, could be all sorts of problems. Psoriasis, not leprosy, not Hansen's disease, I try to point that out regularly, but they even by the era of our sages, which is sort of the modern era post-Jesus, in the common era, as we call it, were discomforted by the idea of people being judged for their surface issues. So they insisted that these issues had some greater ethical relevance, that there was an ethical import, a moral circumstance that led to tzara'at, that led to these things we call commonly leprosy, which are not leprosy. So one of the things they suggested was tzara'at, by sort of phonemic association, comes as a result of tzarut ayin, narrowness of the eye, which is constricted vision, stinginess, effectively, or uncharitable views towards other, constricted vision. Being not exactly a pessimist or a cynic, but being unfair to one's fellow, not judging lechafzrut for the sake of merit, but judging guilty until proven innocent. How do we make judgments? How do we understand each other? How do we understand our messy status in the world, our value, the value of others, the ethical character of others? As I said, our sages recommend judging things lechafzrut, for the presuming innocence, as we would in the American legal system. And the Pachad Yitzchak, who was the first of the Boyan Revis at the late 19th century, notes this, because the priest is the one who makes the assessments. He's effectively the metaphysical dermatologist. I just came up with that, but I'm going to trademark that, metaphysical dermatologist. So priests are seekers of peace and lovers of humankind, as we understand, at least from our sages. So it is their goal, because they are themselves optimists and charitable towards their fellows, to adjudicate the cases. And the Pachad Yitzchak notes that when you have a sick person, and someone's maybe on the Misha Berach list, you could say to them, if it's not getting worse, it must be getting better. Or alternately, you could say, since it's not getting better, it must be getting worse. The challenge of how do we judge cup half empty, cup half full, or as the engineer might say, case not adequate to quantity. Never heard that one? No. Whether the cup is not half empty or half full to an engineer, but it is not at its optimal filling, not as optimal quantization. So to do so, to judge accurately and ideally with a bit of charity and intellectual discourse, we need to bring things to the surface. Maybe the sages were right about that. That to truly see another person, to truly evaluate a situation, to truly understand moral charges, it has to be raised to the surface, to the level of explicit viewing, to the level of consciousness. So we're told by the Sefer HaChinuch, one of my favorite commentators writing in the medieval period, more or less writing an ethical will, an ethical treatise, one of the first law codes based on 613 mitzvot, wonderful writing. He says of the case of the afflicted house, he says that discoloration is essential in judging what's happening. Why? Because it requires you to see it. So if your house is darkened, if it doesn't have windows, as many pre-modern houses, just huts, wouldn't have windows, you can never have nega, you can never have this affliction, nor could an incomplete house, which is to say, allegorically, and I think he was going there right away, you can't judge things until you see them clearly. And so many things are concealed on the, so to speak, interior of the house that without good illumination, without a complete building, without windows and aerating the thing, you don't know. You don't know another person. There's this long-standing debate that is not unrelated to our parasha, and I was reading some science on it. So when you have a cut, a scrape, an abrasion, should you put a Band-Aid on it or not? Do you know this one? A new science on this? They used to say air it out. You know, now they say cover it. They've done studies that covering it for 5 days, I don't know if it's the pressure, I think it's the moisture that it retains, actually helps it to heal faster. That debate aside, that question is still pertinent and germane to our lives. But I think metaphorically or ethically or in terms of our decision-making, we can't make informed decisions without airing things out, without wrestling with the truth, without grappling with each other, without occasional argument and confrontation, and even the internal confrontation, addressing one's own self explicitly and consciously and conscientiously. So say our sages in various places in the Talmud, that lesson of the illuminated house, that lesson that in order to judge nega in a house, to judge affliction, mold in a house, before you take it apart brick by brick, mortar by mortar, and scrape it, you have to really be able to see things. And so say our sages in Talmud and elsewhere, that's the lesson. The lesson of the priests is a lesson to us all, especially, moreover, the leaders. Don't look at people's faults if they're buried, if they are mired in darkness and light. If someone's condition is already poor, as a poor house might be, incapable of erecting windows, the fact of negaim, that's the broader word for afflictions, is no sign of impurity. For nega is a visible outward manifestation. Tight straits might just be driving a person to gloom and despair. Judge each other carefully. There's a line in Zen in the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance about mechanics feel and how carefully or how hard you should tighten a bolt, a nut on a bolt. And if you're too strict, if you're too severe, you can strip the bolt. Be alert to the condition of the bolt, not just your own finger strength. If the person is already in despair, don't push too hard. Don't judge too severely. And to make real accurate decisions, we need, as I said, to have all the facts at hand, to have the full security briefing, not just what's available on a talk show. So the Talmud, there's these many interesting and quirky conceptions of where the Moshiach, the Messiah, will come from. And there are times where our sages try to implicate their own teacher in the coming of the Messiah, that this Messiah will be named after my teacher, who is the greatest. And they cite various verses. But there is, as those of you who are David Bowie fans know, the tradition of the leper Messiah. It's quoted in Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars. So the leper Messiah is a very queer tradition, an odd choice. The Messiah himself will be afflicted. Maybe it just means that Messiah will be empathetic to humankind's distress. But what our Talmud suggests and is referred to elsewhere by our sages is that what it tells us that the Messiah will come as metzora, as an afflicted, as a leper. Try not to overuse that word because I don't want to conflate real leprosy, real Hansen's disease with what our Bible understands, which is different kinds of eczemas, more or less. What it teaches us is that the Messiah will have these surface afflictions, which is to say that in the future, in the world redeemed, or prior to the world redeemed, as a precondition of the world being redeemed, all the evils will have to be on the surface. That we can't confront evil, we can't confront distress, we can't confront our own shortcomings or the distress of our neighbor and fellow without lifting it to the surface. That's more or less a principle behind psychoanalysis and psychotherapy, is that you can't become a better person until you realize what the muck and mire inside of you is. And like tar, as you lift it out of the ground, it dries out and cakes and can be scraped away easily. But if you leave it bubbling and percolating inside, it doesn't do much good. So the goal in the messianic period, or in the messy cleaning of our own lives, is to bring things to the surface and thereby allow them to fly off, allow ourselves to be liberated of them. One of the rituals of cleansing oneself from tzara'at, from various forms of skin and other affliction, discharges, is to take a live bird and a sacrificed bird and to bind them together in some ways and then to send off the live bird to the countryside. So Chizkuni, one of our medieval sages, says, what this is to indicate in some way, some metaphoric way, birds have a habit of resting on houses, on buildings. And what you want to do is get it to fly away. These difficulties, the pains of life, our shortcomings, our growing edges, is now the term a lot of people use to indicate that a challenge can be an opportunity. They can rest upon us, put their weight on us, linger, and when we bring them to the surface, when we look at the house clearly, when you see the shingles on the roof and shoo away the bird, you can feel a certain kind of freedom. And it flies off to the open country, never to be seen again, just like the scapegoat, just sent away. There's a ritual way to do that, but there's a much more personal way to do that, and the structure through which we become better people and enliven and lift up our fellows is to help ourselves see clearly, to draw things to the surface where they can be seen clearly, and even though wound care now, they recommend covering wounds, the old-fashioned way of the wound will dry out, and you let the wounds of one's past and story and own deficits come to the surface and dry, and then just send them away. I hope you have luck with that in your lives.